is in the farm worker movement, you're going to have to deal with the Bishop's Committee and Seth George Higgins and Roger Mahoney. Of course, you've already been trying to get hold of him.
Yeah. He told me that if I would write some questions that I could, that he would respond to.
George has a remarkable memory, George Higgins. Mm-hmm. And and George, you know, his whole background was in labor. That's how he came up as one of those quote-unquote labor priests. I have an extra copy, and I'll give it to you, Pat. You know, some of the life of George. And I'll let you take it, and if you want to keep it, you can. If not, you can return it and give it to somebody else. But I'll give it to you.
All right.
Remind
Thank
me
you
of where to go.
Much. Okay.
And but it brings up a lot of farm worker stuff and some of the interesting stories that he brings in there about me too.
Mm.
So it's kind of fun.
George is in Chicago.
No, he's in Washington D.C.
Oh, Washington.
He's
That's
at the
right.
Catholic University.
Yeah. Right.
Now I have his phone numbers and everything. If you want to get a hold of him,
I would like to.
Yeah, because he's a good guy.
I know.
He might want to write something too, but he does a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm.
He's retired now. From, he used to see where he was. He was with the Bishops' Conference for years as mm-hmm. kind of our point man in social justice. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously the department has widened now. Now we go into national affairs and all that kind of mm-hmm. thing. But George was kind of the old type of social action representative mm-hmm. of the bishops at the United States Catholic Conference, which mm-hmm. is the secretariat for the National Conference of Catholic Bishops.
What does that mean, the secretariat?
Well, they're kind of the administrative arm of the Bishops' Conference. So the bishops are united. The National Conference of Catholic Bishops is the official conference of bishops in this country, the NCCB.
Mm-hmm.
And then the USCC, United States Catholic Conference, is the executive arm for the bishops.
Mm-hmm.
They both obviously prepare, as a secretariat, they actually prepare a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, education, social action, international affairs, things of this nature. And then they execute a lot, too. They do a lot of testimony in Central America, for example, for mm-hmm. Congress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things.
So that's where the staff is.
That's where the staff is, exactly. It's like Riverside.
Serve and
like Riverside Drive, the National Council of Churches.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the staff is, mm-hmm. exactly.
Okay.
And it's in Washington. Now, that's where George was up until just a few years ago. He's now at the Catholic University, which is just a stone's throw.
So he's teaching part-time?
Oh, yeah. I'd say very part-time. He's, mm-hmm. he's kind of a professor emeritus, you know, kind of. I really don't think he's teaching that much there at all.
Well, he's earned any rest he can manage.
Well, he doesn't. He loves to travel and has gotten into a lot of these international labor groups and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But he's a grand man. And he knows Caesar through and through. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I haven't talked to him for a while. And I've sent him some of the stuff that's appeared in there. Scurrilous piece that appeared in the Village Voice.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that.
Ours was not as bad as that, but it did talk about some of the problems.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you when you first got involved with the farm worker movement.
Let me give you that. So in 1964, and I won't go into the whole history of why we did it, we formed the Archbishop under the pressure of the burgeoning civil rights movement in the country, formed a commission on social justice. And I became the chairperson. I was the first chairperson, really the founder, the first chairperson of the Commission on Social Justice for the Archdiocese of San Francisco. And John DeLurie, whose name is on my baseball bat, became our executive secretary for that commission. Quite obviously, we were mostly concerned in the area of civil rights and in the area of that whole movement. We got formed because of that. 1964 was the year of the the anti-fair housing amendment,
yes,
Proposition 14, the effort to try to put a piece of, as you know what it was.
And, yeah, I remember that.
And that was one of the reasons why we fought it. Of course, as you know, we lost, but it was declared unconstitutional. So, I just want you to know, though, that you're sitting in one little town that voted the right way. It was Palo
Alto.
Really? Yes.
Congratulations.
So I was not here then, but they did vote in the right way. So then that was in 60, and then the farm worker movement started in 65. It had started before that, of course, it's house meetings and
sure,
all that kind of thing, of course, which you already know. But and word began to come up to us, from Delano. People wonder, how did you ever get involved so deeply in that? Well, quite obviously, the local church, local Catholic church, in the Central Valley, many of whose members were farmers or people close to the farming ministry, and who in an area that was very obviously negative, even suspicious of any kind of organizational efforts in the area of labor, those clergy in that area, particularly the pastors, wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And besides, it was in the conservative Central Valley, and also near the very conservative church of Los Angeles in those days, Cardinal McIntyre. So the appeal began to come up to us to try to to do something to get some kind of clerical or Catholic presence in the fields, because, as we well know, and I'm not going to go into that, the National Farm Worker Ministry was there.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, as we know, the Protestants were, in that group, were very, very present to Chris and
Jim Drake.
Did Jim die?
No, Jim is organizing with the IAF.
Oh, good for him.
In Texas, in Harlingen. Is that how you pronounce it? Harlingen, Texas. I think with the woodcutters, but I'm not real sure.
Good for him. I'm glad to hear that. Did somebody in that early ministry, I don't know, somewhere I got, anyway, without going any, into any detail, but that part of the story you do know. So, of course, I did, in one way, is what did we do, and how could we respond? And so then finally, there was the, the march from Delano to Sacramento in 1966, and which was during Lent of 1966. So the appeal came to us to, we ought to be doing something. So what I did then was, first of all, with some others, I myself went on the march at certain two or three times during it. I obviously couldn't leave I was directing a retreat center. I mean, I was not full-time, by the way, as chairman of the Commission of Social Justice. As a matter of fact, I was directing a retreat center in the town just next door, Menlo Park. And listened to the word, and myself joined the march a number of times. In fact, it's where I really first met Caesar, really met him personally, was awed. I remember he was on a cane the first time I saw him because his feet were hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the station wagon alongside that he would get in and lie down every once in a while in. But and then what I did was organize other people to go down to the march over the time. Then I joined the march Easter Sunday evening, or not Easter Sunday evening, pardon me, but
Holy Saturday
evening, correct, and joined their rally there outside of the state capitol, and then marched, of course, with them up to the Capitol, and and spoke there. But one of the things I want to put in here, what I tried to do with Bill, along with Bill Kircher, was we try to induce Governor Pat Brown to be there. We called him.
You worked on that.
On the phone down at Frank Sinatra's place in Palm Springs. Now, I feel one of the reasons he lost the election the following year to Reagan, mm-hmm. you know, he was afraid of tying in with this, but given the fact that he was, you know, he was losing out in so many other areas, I always feel this is one of the factors mm-hmm. that turned people against him. But anyway, he refused mm-hmm. to come up. But Bill and I worked in on the night before, both of us phoning and trying to encourage, you know, the jets they had, he could have been up there in an hour and back, going back again, but he refused to come at that time. So it was from that time that I then began to really get involved, and some of the things I did was begin to write letters to some of the vintners, you know, who were Catholics, who ran wineries, to consider signing contracts with the farm workers. I recall some of the letters I got back, and of course the Archbishop was getting nervous about our involvement in this. Obviously, word was coming to him that, you know, maybe communists are involved and things of that nature. But see, one of the things Caesar always, you know, made every effort to do was to keep as many clergy as possible, to keep that image from happening. It was not only because he wanted to image the connection of the religious effort with what he was doing, not only because he wanted to to maintain a nonviolent posture, but also because he wanted to really to dissipate that accusation so readily coming forth from people who want to try to destroy movements of this kind. It's obvious that a few old fellow travelers were there, of course, but they had no commanding influence, no central influence.
Sam Kirshner.
Oh, yeah, Kirshner, that's right. And who was the other one? His name was a Hoffman. There was another from Berkeley, you know, who was an attorney and who had been a one time associated with the party, you know, but it was... He was so innocuous anyway, you know, there was no danger of that. But that was one of the reasons Caesar did that kind of thing. And
do you know that for a fact?
Pardon?
Do you know that for a fact, Gene?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I would say this, the presence of the clergy first, you know, obviously, because he was working with people for whom religion was, you know, was not only, well, it was a very cultural factor. Secondly, obviously, to maintain a nonviolent stance, and thirdly, you know, was it the fact of clergy, especially Catholic clergy, being there, mm-hmm. Would dissipate any taint but any indication that there was any serious involvement of the Communist Party in the movement. That didn't have to last very long, because mm-hmm. after the movement had going, I think that accusation just seemed, you know, it was
irrelevant.
It just had no place. But at any rate, it was after that that I really began getting involved in, you know, doing these various things. And of course, this is, you know, I was called, the reason for this is what I was called in one of the farm papers of the valley, the papal bull. The papal bull is rampant in our valley. You know, trying to bludgeon people into submission, and that was the reason.
Interesting
for this. So I'm trying to see the other things. I haven't put the dates together as well as I could on this thing. I can't remember when I Wednesday's big fast was?
Oh, I can tell you if that would help.
Yeah. What year was that?
I did a chronology.
That's great. If you do a chronology, Pat, it would be very helpful for me. See, that's what I did with this when I gave a talk some years ago on the civil rights thing. And I put it all in chronology, and it's a great peg for the mind.
Yeah. So you just look through, and you can see when it was.
It's one of those.
Hit it on the computer, obviously.
Oh, yeah. It's great to do that, isn't it? Yeah, March the 17th, that's right, yeah. Yeah, national boycott, that's right, announced. And that's, see, that's so important, just the whole business of the boycott,
mm-hmm.
Which was the genius of organization,
yes,
on the part of Caesar and his staff to do that. There was no other way of doing it. You can't pick it.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 acres.
So you remember the DiGiorgio boycott?
Yes, and I remember that happening.
Were you involved in that Schenley negotiation?
No. But I was involved in the first one they ever obtained, and one of the contracts they still have, and that's not here.
What is that?
That's the Pirelli Minetti.
Oh yeah, it's later. It's in there. Here it is.
Oh, there
misspelled.
It is. Yeah, that's right.
It just comes up over and over and over again. So you were involved in that negotiation?
Yes, we went down there to have the signing of the contract. There were three of us who became negotiating. Not the negotiating team, but the mediating team in the negotiations. And that was Rabbi Joe Glazer, who was then the executive director of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, the Union UAHC, which is the representative group for the Reform Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
He's now back in the East Coast and has spent a number of years. There was Father Richard Byfield, Episcopal priest, who was then pastor of All Saints up here in Palo Alto, and myself.
Is it B-Y-F-I-E-L-D?
Yes, B-Y-F-I-E-L-D, Byfield.
So you were the mediating team?
Yeah, we were the mediating group at that time. Yeah.
What did it mean, really? I mean, I used to always be hearing about those mediating efforts, but I never knew exactly what was involved in that.
Well, we set up situations for negotiations,
mm-hmm.
And we presided over, one of us being the chair each time, we presided over those meetings, and we had them in various places. And
were those meetings actual contract negotiation meetings?
Yes, they were. They were efforts at contract negotiations.
So it would be kind of like the bishops in El Salvador setting up the opportunity for the guerrillas and the government to meet.
And of course, this is exactly the function of the bishop, that the bishops' committee, the National Bishops' Committee under George Higgins and Roger, later on, actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what we were involved here was a three-pronged thing, because we had the Teamsters, and the farm workers, and the grower. So we had, and I can't remember all the ins and outs, but now it fades in my memory at the present time.
Yeah, I understand.
You might be interested to know, however, that it was 1966. That I took up flying because I couldn't stand the drive to Delano, and I'm still a pilot to this day.
you did it for that reason.
one of my first long cross countries, you had to have somebody sign it and indicate that you'd been there, is signed by Cesar Chavez in my flight log.
Oh, that's marvelous.
That must be one of the more unique reasons for learning to fly.
Yeah. And it just happened that my secretary's husband at Valombrosa was a flight instructor, so that's how I got my first free
So is that whose plane you would use?
Oh no, no. I belong to a club. Joined a club. It was called the Flying Ten out of San Carlos Airport in San Carlos. And I've flown Caesar, you know. And I've flown the, and I didn't. I've flown Border Patrol down and four of the farm workers down at in Arizona on the border. And we did just to see if the scabs were coming over.
Oh, I see.
And we actually did count. I flew in the Coachella Valley. Not the Coachella Valley so much. Was that Coachella? Could be. No, it wasn't down there. Well, I did do that too. I did fly. Yes, Coachella Valley. I took some of the farm workers up and the staff. We went around trying to count how many scabs were in the fields. I flew them over the fields many times.
Mm.
And counting scabs. See how many people were working in the fields. Because the Christian Brothers, you know, that's how the band was, the guy that worked with them so much in Sacramento. Came up and on the staff of Governor Brown, and I was kind of business up there, but was very close.
Leroy Chatfield?
Leroy. Leroy was a Christian brother.
Yes.
And as you know, was at Garces High in Bakersfield and got disillusioned with the brothers when they were so stalled so much on this and joined Caesar.
Well, that's interesting. I interviewed him, but you know how Leroy is. He has that tendency that if he can't think of something good to say, then he won't say anything. And he was talking about getting involved. He never mentioned his disillusionment with the Christian.
Well, again, I don't want to say it. You know, you've got it on the tape. I mean, there's no doubt that it was. You know, I can't judge another person's reason for changing their direction of their lives. But there was no doubt that that was a factor.
Uh-huh. So you were really very, very deeply involved.
Yes, as much as one could be at such a distance. And since I had a more than a full-time occupation at the time, I was running Valombrosa, the retreat center. I was engaged in doing that. In fact, in '66, just finished building the chapel there. I was involved in about 10 radio programs a month.
Jeez.
And KPFA in Berkeley and KCBS in San Francisco. And I was chairman of the commission, you know, and but whenever the need was, and they called often enough, I did respond. If I couldn't respond myself, I tried to make sure that others did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure if we went through some of these things, I could indicate the. I love these pages once they get out of order and finished.
It was a little off as it went through and kept numbering the pages below. On the next page instead of the page it should have been.
Christian Brothers. Tomorrow. Yeah, now there's the fast. There's the fast again. I was. I have a famous picture upstairs of myself giving communion to Bobby Kennedy. Giving communion to Caesar with Bobby Kennedy standing right alongside of me. That was that picture. I was one time on, I think, for 30 seconds of international telestar fame. That was played in that convention that year, 68, after Bobby was killed. I'll never forget that, how awful that was to me, because all those people were there when Caesar came off that fast. And I remember driving down Highway 5 to be there, and with the principal celebrant of that mass, which we had on the flatbed truck. And no doubt at the 40 acres. And Caesar, I had visited Caesar a couple of times while he was on his fast to encourage him and all that.
I remember that occasion. I drove up from where I lived out near San Bernardino with a couple of women that had never been involved. It was a very special time.
68 was a just a very, very, very dramatic year for me. Not only that, but then two of the kids I knew, so one was killed in Vietnam and another one was maimed for life. I also moved that year from, I was changed from Valombosa Retreat House to the inner city parish of Sacred Heart in San Francisco. That would have been in June of 1968, where I accepted it because I realized that I had to put my feet where my mouth had been. That was an inner city parish. Caesar came there later, and sometimes later on we had rallies there at Sacred Heart in San Francisco. It's in the Fillmore district of San Francisco. I was there for 4 years. And the other important thing I remember was the time, you know, while I was at Sacred Heart. I still remember it very well because I remember I have a bad back, and my back went out on me badly from standing so long. Robert McAfee Brown and myself, when they jailed Caesar down in Salinas.
Oh, yes.
And I later went down. In fact, I was afraid to fly. I was flying. I was a pilot by that time, obviously. But because my back hurt so much, I had a friend of mine who all was a pilot fly me to Salinas. And I was the person that went in to talk to Caesar as representative of the religious groups who were picketing outside the jail where he was being held. At least that particular instance stands out in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Brown was there too?
Bob Brown was with me, yeah.
Did he go in too to talk
to
him?
Yes, he did. Bob Brown and myself. You know, see, the Bishop's Committee was involved by this time in all of this. That are finally the signing of the contract with the Great Growers in 1870.
So that was the year that they really got involved?
They probably started before.
A bit before.
Yeah,
that.
I would say before that. George would be able to tell you. But they started sometime in 69 and 70, and because they're the ones that were. This contract was signed with the Bishops' Committee, which George Higgins really, even though some of the bishops. In fact, the bishop that was. Chair of that committee has died, and that man was his name, too nice guy. But George more or less did the work anyway. And that was the So this must have been, Pat, this must have been after that, you know, the Salinas business. Gracious Witness Agreement, Dustin Lettuce. They started work over there too. That was after we had done these other, you know, Caesar had gone to jail there.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the man from, you know, to go through the archives of the Los Angeles Times and the other newspaper that did a good job in doing most of it, a good job in covering the farm workers was the Salinas.
Oh yes, newspaper. I remember that. Yeah.
They did a good job, and so did for the most part.
Henry Wein. What's his name? Is it Henry Weinstein? I think I have that a little wrong.
Yes, that's not. Doesn't strike, but it is a Jewish name.
Mm-hmm.
And he did accurate reporting. George Higginson, for the most part, he did accurate reporting.
I met him two or three times.
Yeah, so the Salinas, and also the Salinas, California, whatever, but they did good reporting too,
mm-hmm,
about what was going on. Took leave of absence from the diocese. It wasn't really a leave of absence, but was given a special assignment by the diocese. And I became director for justice and peace for the National Federation of Priest Councils. Director for Justice and Peace, National Federation of Priest Councils. And we became this kind of it's a federation of priests, senates, and councils throughout the country. And we then became definite members of the National Farm Worker Ministry. And certainly now I had a national platform. And it was very important because there were prejudices again among some clergy folk coming from the Midwest and the East who had visions of the farm. Whose vision of the farm was their own vision of those nice little family farms in the Midwest and so forth, and had no idea of the big agribusiness situation with which we were dealing in California. So it was awfully important for me to be able to interpret that, mm-hmm, so that they could get a better understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about organizing farms, mm-hmm, you know, farm workers. Because of the size of farms out here, the big, you know, California bonanza that always depended on massive slave labor from the very beginning,
mm-hmm,
you know. And it wasn't just the great entrepreneurs who did this. It was because we had the Indians and then the Chinese and then the Filipinos and then the Mexican Americans that were in desperate need of labor that they were able to do what they did. So I then was on the staff of the National Federation of Priest Councils in 72 and definitely joined a number of times in the, often met with the farm worker, I met with the farm worker ministry.
I remember you coming to board meetings.
Yes, board meetings, exactly, and many times. And then, of course, the big year was 73, of course, that would have been the following year when Chris Hartmeyer organized countrywide. This is when the Teamsters started to move back, did move back into the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Hartmeyer organized on the Protestants on a national scale, and I organized the Catholics on a national scale, brought out many, many people to join Coachella, brought them out for meetings and everything else like that to organize the from Coachella all the way up to Fresno, the boycott lines and the efforts to stem the tide of the Teamsters pushing aside the farm workers and taking over those contracts again. And ultimately we came to Fresno as we worked up the valley. And it was there that since it was summertime and since I was no longer involved in specific parish work and things like that, that I got a bunch of priests from San Francisco, priests and others who were at a conference in San Francisco, and mostly Jesuits, and convinced them that we had to stand with the farm workers And by that time, I had made the decision that this time, I would take the nonviolent stance, and yet stand to be arrested. So we were arrested and taken to the jail in Fresno. And I had promised the guys I had told them, I'm sure it would only be a weekend. We're in the Fresno County Jail for 2 weeks. So it was sometime just after my birthday, and my birthday is July 28th. It was sometime after that, and I think we get out on the 15th of August, which is a holy day for Catholics. It's the Assumption of Mary, and I remember we went on a fast in the jail, not a protest fast, but it was a religious fast. A number of us, until the farm workers convinced us. They didn't want us to lose our health. And I also, just from a Catholic point of view, and it just wasn't Catholics who joined us, but I was locked in a cell with Sal Alvarez from down in San Jose, who's coming to see me Tuesday again. We were in a cell together, and it was a cell that was about 20 by 30, 30, about 30 of us were in that cell. We had tiered beds, and we went on this fast. But another thing I finally induced the authorities to do, it wasn't easy. Of course, we had this wonderful doctor, who I forget who it was now, but he used to come in, and he was really our emissary to the outside world. He wasn't treating us at all. We weren't in need of treatment, but he wanted to make sure we didn't get unhealthy. But one of the greatest events we would have in there was the Eucharist. And I finally induced them, what do we have? We got matzahs. And somebody got some Manischewitz wine into us. And we had, and I want to tell you what the ultimate temptation is when you're fasting and celebrating Eucharist. The ultimate temptation, I feel, is to take the biggest piece of the bread. I felt that was the, yes. And it really was, you knew it was Eucharist, your right thing and everything, but you were hungry too, We were fasting, and we were drinking liquids, however. One of my young men, though, that came down with me, a young priest in the Diocese of San Francisco, Archdiocese of San Francisco, decided he was going to go without water, too. And, boy, it was, he got very ill. And we finally induced him, but you can't do that, fast.
Do you remember at that time about a big meeting in San Francisco of Network, where a lot of nuns were called on?
Yes, I do. That Network group that comes out of Washington, D.C. has done a great job. They're still very active, very active. And, because, see, there's so many other things. It's too bad, but you lose contact. You'd have to get people who are with you as you did this. Mm-hmm. Because those of us who got, some sense got ourselves into one of these issues, all of a sudden got ourselves into all of them, because there was nobody else. Mm-hmm. And with such a sea of issues and multitudinous involvements, to keep it all together and, to know where you were and what you did is not that easy, I find,
Were you at that meeting in San Francisco?
I can't remember if I was or not. I can't remember that. It does not... I just...
It's mentioned here with the names of a couple of the women, and your name, of course, too.
Oh.
And I know Dorothy Day, of course, came from the East.
Well, this was the one. This was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was after. It was Dorothy, by the way, who came after she found out we were in jail.
Oh, I see.
And then she got jailed after that, but she came out because we had been jailed.
I see.
And then there's that famous picture of her.
Yes, wonderful picture.
And the trouble was that we got very little publicity for this, And in some sense, not that you want publicity, but obviously something like this is demonstration. And therefore, what you'd like to see it being demonstrated, but unfortunately, and I want to, you got to take it from the very, very beginning, and that's, it was after my first visit to the march that I began to be concerned about where was organized labor, where was the AFL-CIO, And I recall calling George Higgins in Washington, D.C., who had, you know, who had close connections with the top people of labor, and asking him where were they. And I really believe that I was maybe not the only instrument, but certainly that I was an important instrument of getting Bill Kircher out there in the first place.
And when did he first come?
He was director of that would have been during the march, uh-huh. Yeah. And he was director of organization for the AFL-CIO. Of course, as you know, there were kind of jurisdictional problems involved then, too, because the other union, led by, gosh, an awful name, Squatty Mind, who was the, he's dead since, the head of that union. They finally amalgamated. He became vice president, remember the two of them?
Mm-hmm.
The,
yes.
The Filipino...
Oh, you're talking about the AFL-CIO's
yeah.
organizing committee
right.
that combined with the NFWA.
That's right, exactly, right. exactly. See, that's the amalgamation that had to be made first.
Yes.
And so that was an important. And I just wanted to bring that out that I did. I'm not too sure I was the only, but I know that I was. That it was one of my.
I remember being really impressed with all the labor people that showed up by the end of that march.
Yeah.
Remember all those labor
yeah.
people?
Yeah.
And I didn't know, I mean, I was quite naive and innocent,
yeah.
but I looked around and I thought, I have a feeling that all of a sudden they're jumping on the bandwagon, that they hadn't exactly noticed any of this
That's
until
right.
now.
That's right.
So you were a participant in that.
Yes, and of course, some of the earliest supporters, of course, would have been the longshoreman, warehouseman, and the man who now is the president of that local, president of the Western local now, and Jimmy Herman. They were early. Some of our supporting some of our boycotting some of the ships, carrying grapes and things of that nature. We sometimes would go down and pick up those ships early in the morning. A lot of local things we did too, you know, I can remember setting up one of the first, Kathy McGee and her husband, their little baby, setting up the first farm worker office, one of the first, let's put it that way, because, you know, other scattered things got started in the basement of Sacred Heart Church in 68.
One of the early boycott offices.
Offices, right. Yeah, Kathy McGee.
She's still with the ministry. She and Lupe.
And Lupe, yeah. How far back that goes. Oh, gosh. That was on. So anyway, after the 73 situation, that was a big effort on our part. Then, of course, it was the following year that I ran the State Assembly. And of course, though I was still involved with the farm workers and did things, probably, I'm sure I did some flying and stuff during those days. Obviously, having no jurisdictional base, I wasn't all that institutionally powerful for them, you know. And so that I can't remember doing all that much between then and the time that I came here.
Were you very much involved in the political work to get the law passed?
Oh yes, of course, and there's another thing, sure.
Yeah, that was 74, 75.
75, yeah. Oh yes, gosh, we did. And then of course another thing, what was the proposition we had at Caesar?
Well, there was Prop 22, and that was in 72. And then there was Prop 14 again.
What year was that?
Later on, and I think it was after 75, because it was after I left the staff.
I was, yes, and it was after my election, and I think I became, in fact, West Coast, the Northern California director of that campaign for that. Oh, yeah.
For 22?
No.
72?
No.
For 14?
14, yeah. Did a lot of speaking and talking in that area. Oh, gosh, I remember going many places in that. And see, I had, in some sense, I had the time, too.
let's see, were we for or against Prop 14?
We were for it.
With the other one, I always forget. That's right.
No, we were for it. This was farm worker. Actually, farm worker proposed initiative.
Would that have been 76?
Had to be.
Okay.
It would have been just. Well, maybe not, Pat. See, I came here in February, so I don't remember doing it while I was here. Uh-huh. I think.
Would it have been before the law was passed? I bet it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Must have been 74 then.
Well, it was not while I was running for office in 74.
Oh, uh-huh.
Sit in your minutes, and downtown San Francisco. If it was, it certainly wasn't during the time I was.
November 72 was Prop 22.
Uh-huh. It seems to me it must have been. I can't believe it was 75.
Unfortunately, this only goes through in a little bit into 74.
Oh.
It's not on here. It must have been after. This ends in June of 74. So it must have been after that.
Yeah, I celebrated the Mass for that.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did, yeah. Yeah, I celebrated the Mass for that.
Well, I can find out when Prop 14 was.
Yeah, but I remember doing a lot of active, then of course doing a lot of work on the efforts to get the law across too, though by that time the more powerful Bishops Committee, you know, lobbying under Roger Mahoney and, you know, Higgins and people like that.
Think of anything else that you especially would want me to know about.
Mm-hmm. Just the times, you know, some of those things, just things I did with it, you know, the flights. No, I remember when that was the time I flew Caesar was the time that they were having the two marches, one from Salinas, one from where, and
from two different quarters.
Right, and I flew in from King City to Morgan Hill.
Would he, how did those things come about? Would he call you up?
Yeah, he'd call me up or he'd have one of his henchmen. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, call me up. When they needed, it was always that, you know, you never hear from them until they needed something.
Of course.
Of course.
Too busy the rest of the time.
So they call you up and they felt that there was a need. Otherwise, you'd have a hard time keeping in contact. That was true in the early days. Leroy used to call me up a lot, you know, when he was with them. He was one of them would make the phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And,
one thing that I would like to know your perception on, was it your perception that there were many Catholic lay people involved in the movement?
Yes, certainly in the boycotts. Mm-hmm. Yes, we had a lot of lay Catholics, and we had a lot of good support from Catholic, you know, college students mm-hmm. throughout, whether in secular or Catholic universities and colleges. It had deep support, I'd say, in the clergy, and as time went on, certainly also in the clergy. Mm-hmm. You know, though the clergy might not come out, but particularly after bishops, supported and things like that, it had strong support among the non-farm urban Catholic community. Yes, oh, it did. Yeah.
Oh, the right to organize. Very basic.
That's right, and of course that's, you know, the Catholic history in this country is deep into that. That's where the labor priest came from. You know, the whole notion that's where our people were in those days. That's why the church was so involved in labor.
So that's really a term that's used, labor priests.
That was at one time used, yes, mm. labor priests, yeah. Who were involved, like on the waterfront in those pictures, you know. Mm. Without that kind of...
Yeah, that's something very different from the mainline Protestants. I mean, we just weren't there that much.
Well, because that's where our people were. They were immigrants.
Yeah.
You see? The Irish and the Italians and the Portuguese, and not Portuguese so much, because they got the farms, they knew where to go. But the Irish and Italians and the Germans, and Poles, people like that, so they were immigrant folk. And were laborers. We were there for laborers.
Anything else you want to tell me?
I think that not. I just can't think of anything right now, Pat.
Okay.
I'm sure all the great things that pop into your mind, you're sometimes not focused on it. But I'm sure you have to go, and so do I.
I want to be sure to